President Donald Trump's initial response to Charlottesville read as follows. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides. Less than a half hour later, the neo-Nazi website Daily Stormer posted these words. Trump comments were good. He didn't attack us. He just said the nation should come together. Nothing specific against us. What the Daily Stormer heard, or thought it heard, was a so-called dog whistle, a kind of secret signal of support as significant for what it didn't say as what it did. Ian Haney Lopez, a writer who lives on Oahu for part of the year, has studied the history of dog whistle politics, tracing its growth through the decades in American life. He's the author of Dog Whistle Politics, How Coded Racial Appeals Have Reinvented Racism and Wrecked the Middle Class. We spoke with him the other day.
Dog whistling can work in two very different ways. Dog whistling can work like a secret handshake where the general audience doesn't get it, but the initiated clearly discern the meaning. And,
right.
And you see that, for example, George Bush used to talk about a culture of life or about compassionate conservatism. And
yeah,
that sounded okay to most folks, but to evangelical Christians, there was a clear meaning, right? And so this is dog whistling as a secret handshake.
Yeah.
But dog whistling about a repugnant idea like white supremacy takes a very different form. There, what's most important is to hide the underlying racism from the intended audience itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, dog whistling, the code in dog whistling is acting more like a self-protective lie. It's a way of telling many white voters who are racially fearful, but also deeply opposed to racism, that they're voting these higher values like patriotism or like protecting free speech, when in fact they're being mobilized and agitated by messages that focus on racial doom. You think about Make America Great Again.
Yeah.
Implicit in Make America Great Again is the message that it was great when whites were the dominant group and that it has been degraded by black equality and by non-white immigration. People embracing Make America Great Again get to tell themselves, I'm doing this because I'm a patriot, not because I'm racially fearful.
When did dog whistling become a pretty much of a mainstream political activity? You cite Reagan in particular with some of his coded messages about welfare queens.
I think dog whistling became a national phenomenon in 1972 with Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
This was, you know, the era of silent majority, law and order,
right.
Opposition to forced busing. And we actually have Richard Nixon watching one of his own TV commercials on law and order and saying, that's right, that hits it right on the head. It's all about law and order and the damn Negroes and Puerto Ricans.
Mm-hmm.
That is, Nixon understood that as a result of the civil rights movement, there was a rising anxiety among many white voters that could be tapped into, but it had to be tapped into through coded racial appeals, precisely because of the civil rights movement. Open celebrations of white supremacy were not acceptable.
The target audience, Ian, being people who would consider it vulgar to use the N-word or to get out on the street with a billy club, but had the same kind of attitudes, a little bit more hidden, yeah?
I think that's right. It's, you know, it's really, I would say it's folks who have deeply internalized messages about the importance of white identity, about, you know, the decency of white folks, the threat posed by people of color, the idea that cultures associated with non-whites are inferior, but people who have those as deep, unconscious, even common sense beliefs, but who consciously believe that open racism is morally reprehensible. And so these are people who would be very quick to repudiate anybody who used the N-word,
mm-hmm.
but who are nevertheless sympathetic to people who talk about thugs and criminality and welfare abuse as a way of life in the, quote, inner cities. Okay, so all of these are codes that trigger imagery of black depravity that works for people even when consciously they would reject white supremacist language and offensive racial epithets.
Well, since this whole movement started, we've found out that there are a lot of people like that, right?
Yes. Yes. Although, well, when you say a lot of people like that, you mean the white supremacists or the...
No,
the
I mean
people?
the more polite sympathizers of white supremacy who would, as you say, would never use the N-word, would never identify themselves openly as racist, but would be distinctly uncomfortable about... crime or even someone in their country club.
Or how about distinctly responsive to a politics that appeals to them through coded messages of racial resentment?
Sure.
We have found out that there are a lot of people in this sense. It's a majority of whites. And here's what's startling. Since dog whistling started, no Democratic candidate for president has won a majority of the white vote. So this isn't just Donald Trump.
Yeah.
No Democratic candidate for president has won a majority of the white vote since Lyndon Johnson in 1964 when he signed the Civil Rights Act.
So there's votes to be had, money to be made by embracing this whole perspective, isn't there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm so glad you actually you raised the question of money.
Yeah, well, you can't go too far talking this without talking about money, can you?
Yeah, exactly. As with just about everything in politics, at the end of the day, politics lives and dies by the aphorism, follow the money.
Right.
And what's happening here is, and this actually goes back to the 1930s, business interests were threatened by a federal government that was aggressively regulating the marketplace in favor of regular people.
Mm-hmm.
They also realized that they could find common cause with segregationists and white supremacists who were threatened by a federal government that was insisting on integration. And so from the 1930s still through today, there is a common alliance between big business interests and family dynasties who use racial appeals to convince average people that big government is their enemy. And in fact, what you see is people using this, corporations using this populism, the Koch brothers, Fox News, using this populism to build popular support for politicians who basically serve the interests of the billionaire class. And this is Donald Trump to a T. So Donald Trump isn't just dog whistle politics in the sense of being an aggressive race baiter. He actually symbolizes both elements, aggressively using race to build support for a president and a presidency who primarily serve the interests of the very rich, the billionaire class, Goldman Sachs, Exxon Mobil, the various billionaires who make up the Trump cabinet.
Is it working? It's working, right?
It is working.
Yep.
It's working all too well. I think a lot of people are focused on the stalled legislation in Congress. But meanwhile, what you're seeing administratively are big rollbacks in regulations of the market that protect all of us. And that actually these rollbacks work to the benefit of high-income individuals, corporations that want to pay lower taxes, corporations that want to be free from environmental regulation or regulations prohibiting monopoly. The very rich are making out like bandits.
Ian Haney Lopez, a writer who lives on Oahu for part of the year, is the author of Dog Whistle Politics, How Coded Racial Appeals Have Reinvented Racism and Wrecked the Middle Class.